Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our show tonight is sponsored by Grief Songs for Hope and Comfort by Paul Alexander, and that can be found at www.griefsong.com. Tonight's guest is Dr. Diane Hennessy-Pell, and if you have a question, comment, or would like to talk to our guest, the toll-free number is 888-627-6008. And good evening to you, Bob.
And hello, Fran. And you were telling me actually last night about a new commercial that you didn't see it, but you read about it.
I saw the commercial. But I wasn't able to like capture it or anything like that. But it was I'm very critical of commercials these days, and I thought this was the greatest commercial I ever saw. And I don't have all the details exact, but it starts off with a woman who's pumping gas at the gas station, and the numbers 3, 2, 7 keep coming up. That's how much the gas costs. That's how much it is per gallon of gas. When she goes in to pay for the gasoline, that's the address of the gasoline station on the door front. When she gets in there, everything is 327. Every single thing she happens to look at is 327. She gets inside to pay for this gas, and there's a big sign behind the clerk at the counter, and it says Colorado Lotto with a clock in the middle of it, and the time, of course, is 327. And she says, I think I'll play the pick three. So I just thought it's a very clever commercial. It's a very, very clever commercial. And what immediately came to mind is, gee, I wonder who the guy is who came up with this commercial, and was he somebody who has some sort of knowledge and background in how the universe works and synchronicities and how sometimes spirit gets us to do something. Like, to me, spirit was getting this woman to buy that winning lotto ticket of 327, or he's just a schlump and he was being clever.
Well, I guess you could think of it in a lot of ways. We certainly hear many, many people tell similar stories where they seem to have this synchronicity with numbers and sometimes or symbols or other. Could be colors, it could be music, but it happens, consistently. So in your case, like you just mentioned, well, maybe spirit was, moving in that direction. So how do you view that? I mean, is it, if it's coming from, when you say spirit, you're talking about somebody that's deceased?
So even your guides. I mean, we kind of like want to divide those two, but when it comes to our own betterment here in the physical world, the reason we've incarnated is not readily known to us. So we have to depend on guidance from the other side. So whether it comes from our guides or it comes from our deceased loved ones, it really doesn't matter.
Or we could just be, tapping into this these patterns of consciousness that are not readily available, and there's some sort of a design there that sometimes come out. I mean, when using your let's say we take the theory that it is a discarnate, it's somebody in spirit that's trying to arrange that. So then we'd have to say, well, that the person in spirit, assuming time, past, present, and future is all happening at the same time, they would already know the outcome of that lotto drawing. and maybe and will, they could be playing games, just making all these patterns appear, right? I mean, of
so that you will pick the pattern.
So that, yeah, just like it's like a mind game to them. Let's see if I could make her or.
You want to call it a mind game, but if we are all beings of thought, so everything is a mind game.
And then you say, well, then how does that happen? It's psychokinesis. Do they make the clock, you know, show a certain number? Do they?
Or they make her look at the clock at the particular time.
You know, is there a certain number of gallons that they know or the car is going to take? There's so many, it's so hard to put it into our terms to try to figure out how that happens.
Right, but the one thing that we learned from working with people who are extremely trusting of the spiritual world, and of course mediums who are by nature trusting of the spiritual world. If they are developed mediums, they understand that. And, you know, very often they've gone through times in their lives where they've dismissed things like that. And they've learned over the years that, no, I'm not supposed to dismiss these things. I'm supposed to act on them. And I think that the way humans are programmed right now is to dismiss anything like that, you know, unless it, you know, it's like the old thing, I'll believe in God when I have lunch with him. You know, it's at some point you have to start trusting that the universe has a pathway for you and that you have to follow the indications that are put before you.
Yeah, and even people that don't believe in spirit or don't believe in psi phenomena at all, faced in a situation like that, if they notice, they'll say, well, okay, the 327, 327, hey, there might be something to it. Maybe they'll call it superstition, but they'll act upon it from no rational reason, you know, other than, well, you know, but other people see these patterns and put more thought into it. Of course, in this particular case, would it be, you know, for financial gain to hit a lotto? Well, it could be if you were, depending upon what you were going to do with the money, or if you were desperate, or you had an illness that you had to pay medical bills or something. So it doesn't have to be just because there's a monetary reward for...
Yeah, and I don't think the monetary reward has any more to do with it than spirit kind of just, you know, poking you and saying, please start paying attention to me. Here's an easy way for you to pay attention to me.
Right. And the things that really get your attention are when, with the spirit theory again, I mean, let's say you happen to be thinking of a loved one.
Mm-hmm.
And then just at the same moment that you're thinking of the loved one, some significant thing appears. I mean, maybe a car pulls out with the license plate of that loved one's name, or maybe that loved one loved a particular song when they were alive, and now that particular song comes on the radio.
And that's a very common occurrence.
Yeah, a lot of people report that. So is it that it could be that focused intention? Here you are, the thought is picked up by the person in spirit. It's a direct channel of communication. It's not through a medium. It's just a personal, direct glimpse or connection through the wormhole, or whatever you want to call it, to that person in spirit. They follow the conduit. And the other question is, well, how do they make that happen? Well, maybe they put a thought in your mind to take a particular route in the car, or to
turn on the radio. Yeah, I think the way they make that happen is the same way they make mediums receive the information. You know, everybody thinks it's the medium. The medium is the antenna that's open so that they can easily get through. We're the jerks pumping the gas that first they have to show us the 327 once, then twice, then three, then four, 10 times before we get it. But the mediums are an open channel, so it's easy for them to get the information through the first time. And that's really the only difference. It's up to spirit. It's not us. We're just the receivers of the information. And I think that's the mistake people make. They think that, you know, oh, this medium is better than that medium because this medium, I get names or I get this or I get that. You don't get anything. Spirit's sending it.
Yeah. Well, I think the point is it's not the sitter and it's not the person in spirit and it's not the intermediary. It's a combination of all three. So we can't say that the medium generates the communication.
No,
more than we can say that the sitter generates the communication.
No.
But something happens with that flow of information, and we still continue to try to discover what that is.
Well, the same way that they've been checking the brainwaves of Janet Mayer, medium, for when she's reading, when she's speaking her languages, and when she's in a meditative state, perhaps we need to check the sitters, or just ordinary people, when they all of a sudden get one of these little...
So another research project.
Another research project. We got them all.
We're going to go to a break. When we come back, we're going to have a wonderful guest, a medical doctor, Dr. Diane Hennessy-Powell, and she'll be talking to us about psychic phenomena. So stay with us. We'll be back in a few.
Paul Alexander, singer, songwriter, and licensed psychotherapist, created GriefSong.com after working in hospice providing care to bereaved families. The music of GriefSong.com offers music to support, nurture, and acknowledge the landscape of grief. Many have used Paul Alexander's music for inspiration, memorial services, and comfort. Visit GriefSong.com to hear some of the music available. The sounds of hope and healing. Alan Ross Huguenot, author of The Death Experience, What It Is Like When You Die, describes what people will experience as they die. Alan's book is based on his own near-death experience, combined with 40 years of afterlife research. As a graduate engineer, he collated the latest science of quantum field theory and the physics of consciousness while postulating a scientific basis for the location of the afterlife. Learn more at www.afterlife.pro. The Death Experience is available in paperback, Kindle, or Nook editions.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you could find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
The American Association of Electronic Voice Phenomena has always been international and concerned with more than just EVP. To better serve the public, the AAEVP is now Association Transcommunication, or ATRANSC. Their new website is ATRANSC.org, and their motto is Objective Evidence of Survival. The directors believe people should know that death is not dying, and what we learn now applies to what we will learn hereafter.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide support for families who have suffered the loss of a loved one. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707 or on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
Tuning in, our guest tonight is Dr. Diane Hennessy-Powell. Our sponsor is Grief Songs for Hope and Comfort by Paul Alexander, and that can be found at www.griefsong.com. Back to you, Bob.
And Dr. Diane Hennessy-Powell is a practicing psychiatrist. She's an author, a public speaker, and a researcher. She completed her training in medicine, neurology, and psychiatry at Johns Hopkins University, and she's a former member of Harvard Medical School's faculty. She's published many articles in professional journals. She has a diverse and international clinical background. Her book is called The ESP Enigma, and it examines the science behind psychic phenomena. Dr. Powell's website is her name, DianeHennessyPowell.com, and it's DianeHennessy Powell, POWELL.com. We'll mention that again later. Welcome, Dr. Powell.
Thank you. Thank you. It's a pleasure. And I wanted to let you know I refer patients of mine occasionally to your foundation.
Wow, they're wonderful. You know, it's interesting that it's only, I say, in the past couple of years that we're starting to see some people in the mental health field, you know, calling us because they're looking to integrate some of the research and some of the belief in an afterlife into their practice. So I take that as a positive sign.
Yeah. No, it's extremely healing. Extremely healing. And so I think it's just wonderful what your foundation's doing.
Well, thanks. And I know that, I mean, you have such a diverse background, as we mentioned, and your main interests or psychiatry, obviously, neuroscience, spirituality, and social change. So at first glance, you look at that and you say, well, maybe these are all independent areas of study, but they all fit together, don't they?
Yeah, they do. Exactly. I mean, they all fit together. To me, you know, as a psychiatrist, I mean, that to me is the most, it's the most relevant, important thing to study, you know, is, you know, human consciousness, people, you know, that's what it's all about, is relationships and people. And
right.
So I became interested in that. And as you see, as you talk with people, you can't help but want to also, you know, bring about social change, make life better for people. It's so, and then you want to understand what's happening when you see these changes in people, and there's this neuroscience about it, and it's fascinating stuff.
Yeah, it really is, and it seems to be a natural progression. You study the mind, and if there's evidence that the mind can act separately from the brain, and that consciousness is non-local, and we're all interconnected, and that possibly survive a physical death, you can affect social change.
So. Oh, you bet. You bet.
Something you recognized long ago.
Yeah, I mean, psychiatry is really, they're in need of a new paradigm, and that's really one of my missions, is to shift their paradigm. And it was interesting, the other day there was an article in the New York Times, and it was exactly about the fact that psychiatrists need to shift their paradigm. They don't know where to go, and because they're ignoring all of these things that have been repeated, you know, been reported by people for ages.
Right.
They're ignoring so much of the human experience.
And I think it's fair to say that many people in your profession play a large role in reinforcing the skepticism, you know, just for the reasons you mentioned. To them, psi phenomena couldn't exist, but medication does. So.
Yeah. No, it's really it's one of my concerns, and this is part of why I I'm on a mission about this. Is that, I mean, so many patients report to me that they're so glad that I was their psychiatrist because they're afraid to talk to the psychiatrist about these things. They're afraid that the psychiatrist will think that they're crazy, you know, that the psychiatrists are kind of put in that position in society.
Absolutely. That's the biggest question that we get asked all the time. Am I crazy? And, of course, I say, yes, you are. But
Right. You refer them to the local state hospital, right?
right. Well, you are well-versed in the mind and specific areas in the physical brain. And a lot of the things that I've read point to certain areas of the brain that people believe play a role in psi phenomena, whether it be the pineal gland, or the temporal lobes, or the hippocampi. And I mean, do you think that it's most likely that we have certain parts of the brain that act as receivers of information, and maybe other areas of the brain that filter out the information?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, our brain, the majority of the brain cells in our brain have an inhibitory function, you know, and so there's all of this inhibition that's going on. The left brain is always inhibiting the right brain, for example, in people who are right-handed and have language in the left hemisphere, you know, and so... you know, and it's the chicken who has its head cut off still running around, you know, running around, and it's because the brain was inhibiting movement. And so there's this, with the brain, there's this fascination that neuroscience has with, you know, where the brain activity is happening and the association between that. We now can look at the brain activity, and they can use it as a lie detector, for example. They can say, this is the pattern that we see when somebody's retrieving something from memory versus retrieving it from their imagination, you know, and if they're retrieving it from their imagination, it's more likely to be a lie. You see where I'm going with that. So,
right.
So there's been a tremendous amount of research on that sort of thing. And now there's that kind of imaging available for psychic phenomena. And that's, you know, that's what I think is really exciting research.
I know that you mentioned the left and right brain hemispheres, and I know that one of your areas of expertise is in autism and savants. And as I read in your book, I mean, the savants are usually more dependent upon their right brain hemispheres. And also, the right brain hemisphere is associated with psi phenomena. So do people that are savants and people that have autism sometimes exhibit greater telepathic and psi ability?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's fascinating how many of them will, you know, report just as an aside, you know, something that is, you know, that sort of thing. You know, for example, excuse the dogs. So they'll report something like there was this girl who had a dream that her father was going to die at the dinner table the next day, and she voiced her dream, and the next day it happened exactly as she dreamed it. And
yeah.
You know, that sort of thing, or reports of telepathy particularly between the mother and an autistic child.
It's such a fascinating area of study. I mean, I guess you have theories on what's going on, but when you look at these extraordinary cases of, you know, with numbers and calendars and people being able to read two different books at the same time with the left and the right eye, I mean, what is happening? Are they tapping into fields of information that most of us can't tap into, or what's the theory?
Well, yeah, that is my theory. Is that my theory is basically that information is contained in this. This is. Let me know if I'm, you know, talking, you know, if I need to explain anything. But information is stored in space-time itself, okay?
Right.
And if we live in a holographic universe, okay, then everything that's in the universe, okay, is contained in every part of the universe. Therefore, within our own consciousness field, we actually have a holographic a hologram, basically, of the entire universe. And so we're actually accessing the information within our own consciousness field, which is part of this bigger hologram. Does that make sense?
It does. And a lot of course, when we talk about the survival hypothesis, you know, a lot of people will be very skeptical, and the explanation is, you know, the super psi theory of tapping into fields of information. But it doesn't account for these personalities that seem to come through. So maybe I'm looking at it simplistically, but I can see pulling out a piece of data from an information field, but how do you extract the personality? I mean, does that...
If the person, you know, the super psi question is really a big issue, I think, for mediumship. It really is, because, you just don't know where they could be tapping into. You know, they could be tapping into that person in space-time, you know, in the past. Or, you just don't know. So you can't rule out space. You can't rule out that they, you know, it's psychic phenomena, they're just super psychic. But I think what you have to do, though, is look at the whole of the evidence, you know, not just, you know, the trunk of the elephant. You know, and it's,
right.
So it's combining that with things like Ian Stevenson's work on past lives with children in these countries where reincarnation is part of their belief system.
Right.
And just fascinating how down to these really minute details, really, really well done, very professional, very scholarly work that just seems to be ignored.
Yeah.
Even though he was at a university.
Yeah. No,
See, that's what makes it even, you know, odder. You know, he was at a university, you know, on faculty.
Yeah, if it doesn't fit into your world and your paradigm of learning, then it just doesn't exist, despite the evidence. Right. Well, would you mind taking a caller?
No, I'd love to.
Okay, so who do we have on the line?
Okay, we have Sharon from Knoxville, Tennessee, on line two.
Okay. Hello, Sharon.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi, you're on with Dr. Powell. Did you have a question?
Yes, please. I would like to ask a question. Since you brought up the holographic universe and tapping into our superconsciousness, on the left side and the right side of the brain, where we bring in the Holy Spirit into the right side, my question is your program helps humanity a great deal, especially during devastating, what we seem like a loss. But I've been doing a lot of research since my husband passed 3 weeks ago, life after life and life after death, and read quite a few books and things since then. And what she's brought up about the holographic universe makes a lot of sense, because we're tapping into all the data
right.
of God's creation as a whole within the oneness.
That's right.
And so I've had so many experiences in the last 3 weeks. Every day I have signs that my husband is still present in my life. And
mm-hmm.
if I were to go down...
Yeah, he's actually within you.
It would take a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And he did a lot of meditating. Mm-hmm. But I thought, well, maybe with you being a psychiatrist, Dr. Powell, perhaps maybe you could answer this. When you sustained a sudden death from a massive heart attack, you know, with your husband,
mm-hmm.
The separation is extreme in
mm-hmm.
the first
yes,
few
it
hours
is.
Because it seems like there's no time to talk.
Right.
And the grief is so overwhelming that all you see is separation when you once saw wholeness, which has been a big thing for me. And my question is out of this grief, would you say that might be why the doctors like Dr. Alexander and, Dr. Alex Gray and several of these other doctors that I read about, would that be why you should not go to see a medium, perhaps maybe for several months, I've read, until you've gotten yourself pulled back together? I don't know if I'm asking this in the right
way.
Oh,
gee, I don't really the way that I practice psychiatry is I really look at each individual and their particular circumstance and use my I use my own intuition in working with the person to know, you know, what it is that they are prepared for at that time. So sometimes people are prepared, they're prepared to, you know, the next week, you know, because it's already, you know, part of their belief system. And then there are some people for whom they need some more time. I don't bring it up, you know, right away. And I use my, as I said, I use my own intuition. So there really isn't a prescribed number of months. I'm not sure why they said that.
Yeah.
Well, it's just some of the research I've done. They said maybe you should wait before you approach someone that does go from a intuitive, like, I know as a doctor you probably try to heal as a whole, the mind, body, and spirit when mm-hmm. you're in your presence.
Right.
And so that was just my question. Yeah. Is there any kind of, like, grief time that you need to get past certain, you know, there's like 5 stages of grief?
Oh, I see what you're asking me. I see. You mean, like, is there a value to feeling the pain of grieving? You know, and if you don't
yeah.
feel the pain and you go right to the spiritual, you know, spiritual sort of belief that, you know, that, you know, you're in communication with her and everything's all right, that somehow that's not healthy for you. Is that what you're asking me?
Yeah, basically, like if you
can wait and go through the
5 stages of grief.
I disagree with that idea. I disagree with that. As a psychiatrist, I do not believe that we have to go through that suffering. I really don't believe that that's what was intended, you know, by God or, you know, by, you know, higher power or whatever you want to say, the universe. I don't believe that there was any, intention that we have to suffer. In fact, if you look at some of the spiritual leaders today, people like the Dalai Lama, they say that we're supposed to be in joy.
Yeah. Very much so. And that's what the signs of life that I found on the Forever Family Foundation, because
mm-hmm.
it makes you feel closer. You know, you feel
right.
closer instead of the separation.
Right.
And I just
right.
to see,
exactly.
You know, if you thought there had to be like a certain time frame, like, because I would like to pursue starting to talk to people about things that I'm experiencing on a regular basis, because like y'all said earlier, people say, I think I'm going crazy, you know, and I don't think I am. But these
Sharon, I appreciate your call, and I'm sorry for your loss. I think as Dr. Powell mentioned, there is really no timeline or any set rule. You know, everybody's different, or you know, and I think you just have to intuit yourself what's right for you, you know. So I wish you well on your journey of discovery, and thanks again for calling.
Thank
you for what you're doing to help humanity. I really greatly appreciate that. Thank you.
Take care.
Take care.
Dr. Powell, the one thing that you mentioned in the book and the ESP enigma is that, you know, the brain may not be the only body part involved in telepathy, which might be surprising to some people. So, you know, what else might be involved?
The gut.
Okay.
You know, people talk about there being a, a gut instinct.
Right.
And, you know, there's some truth to that. You know, we have down in our gut, we actually have a complex network of nerves. And they do tell us what our feelings are. And so there's more telepathy when there's something that's emotional going on. You know, telepathy usually isn't usually a neutral thing. You know, usually it's either, you know, somebody's in a crisis or somebody's excited about something, or, you know, something's usually going on, you know, or that's telepathy is at least more likely during those time periods when there's some kind of emotion going on. And, and the part of the brain that, the limbic system, that's one of the parts of the brain that I believe is involved in psychic phenomena, including particularly telepathy. And that's the part of the brain that's also involved in bonding, you know, so it's very interesting, you know, so we are more likely to be in telepathic communication also with those whom we love, you know, if that's the emotion too.
Right.
So.
Understood. Can we have time to go to another caller, Fran?
Yeah, we can get another caller in and then go to a break.
Okay.
Would you like to speak with Marion from Florida, who's on line 3?
Okay. Hi, Marion.
Hello.
Hey, Bob. How are you?
Okay. How you doing? You're on with Dr. Okay. Powell. Marion, did you have a question for Dr. Powell?
Well, I had a comment.
Okay.
The last caller was asking about, you know, seeing a medium and maybe seeing the medium too soon or what kind of problems it might be. And my wife and I had an experience when our son died. John Edward was going to be in the area just maybe 6 weeks later, and I had read that if you go too soon, the person on the other side might not be able to communicate. But we did go, and we did get a reading, and it was so reassuring.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
I just wanted to comment on that. It seemed fitting to what the woman was asking about.
Yeah, I appreciate that. So, I mean, you would be one that would say that the mediumship reading had an effect on your grieving.
Oh yes, it's had a positive effect, and from time to time,
a positive effect, and that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Right,
that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
Well, thank you for sharing, Marion.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, that's all I had to say. Thank you.
All right. Take care.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. All right, we're going to go to a short break. We come back, we're going to continue this discussion with Dr. Powell, so stay with us. We'll be back in a few.
Paul Alexander, singer, songwriter, and licensed psychotherapist, created GriefSong.com after working in hospice providing care to bereaved families. The music of GriefSong.com offers music to support, nurture, and acknowledge the landscape of grief. Many have used Paul Alexander's music for inspiration, memorial services, and comfort. Visit griefsong.com to hear some of the music available. The sounds of hope and healing.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide support for families who have suffered the loss of a loved one. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707 or on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
The Camlack Center is putting birth and death back together again. Aimed at changing the way we look at death, the Camlack Center was founded in 2002 as a publishing company and teaching center. When we know that there is nothing but life, we realize that birth and death are events in time and space. Our grief can open us to other dimensions of reality and allow us to experience our loved ones who are no longer in the physical body. Our events and products are based on personal experiences of survival of consciousness after physical death and decades of research into how death has influenced the development of our consciousness. Visit www.camlack.com, that's K-A-M-L-A-K.com, for articles, videos, books, and more to help you cope with the loss of a loved one.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you could find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
If you are just tuning in, our guest tonight is Dr. Diane Hennessy Powell. This show is sponsored by Grief Songs for Hope and Comfort by Paul Alexander, and he can be found at www.griefsong.com. If you are a business interested in advertising on our show, please contact us via email at radio@foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call the office at 631-425-7707. Before we get back to our show, we have a few important foundation updates for our listeners. There are three ways to show us you like Signs of Life Radio. Go to the Signs of Life Radio page on Facebook and like us. You can donate, use the donate button on any of our weekly email show reminders to support programming. There's also a space there to add a comment on what you love and what you might not like so much about the show. And three, remember us when you shop. Yes, when you shop, you can support the work of our 100% volunteer not-for-profit organization without spending any additional money at all. First, you'll need a credit card to shop online. So if you don't already have one or in need of another, go to foreverfamilyfoundation.org and apply for the Visa credit card. Visa will make a donation to us for each card that's taken out, and each time the card is used, a portion of that charge is donated back to Forever Family Foundation. Second, if your shopping takes you to the Internet, consider shopping at Amazon.com. But first, use the link on the Forever Family Foundation website, and again, a portion of your spending comes back to support our work. Now, if you don't see what you want on Amazon, then sign up with iGive.com and name Forever Family Foundation as the charity of your choice. Then search iGive.com for your items. For each search, we receive a donation. And when you find what you are looking for in their more than 1,000 online stores like Old Navy, QuickBooks, Radio Shack, a portion of what you spend is again donated back to Forever Family Foundation. So please take a few moments when you shop to show us that you care. Our Grief Transformation Weekend is being held July 26th through 28th at the Guest House in Chester, Connecticut. The first 50 reservations will fill this intimate retreat escape with like-minded people seeking to maintain their relationships with those who have crossed to the other side. Watch for announcements in your email boxes, which will tell you all about this exciting weekend with Garrett Jackson, Paul Alexander, Dr. Betty Kovach, Doreen Malloy, Rebecca Ann Lo Cicero, Laura Lynn Jackson, and our Healing Reiki team of volunteers. Our seventh annual conference will be held this year in beautiful and warm San Diego, California, at the DoubleTree by Hilton Golf Resort, November 9th and 10th. Mark the dates, as this will be the best one ever. We're working on some very special things right now, and once that's all etched in stone, the announcements will go out first to our members only with a steep member-only discount. Back to you, Bob.
And we're back with Dr. Diane Hennessy Powell. She is the author of The ESP Enigma, The Scientific Case for Psychic Phenomena. Her website is dianehennessypowell.com. Well, thanks for hanging in there with us, Dr. Powell. I know another area of interest to you is telepathy, specifically twin telepathy. And the twins exhibit some extraordinary connections. Is it something you think that's biological, or what are the theories why telepathic communication among twins is so strong?
Well, it's interesting because I see the connections between identical twins as being on more than one level. And so let's just talk about, for example, what I found interesting and I talk about in my book are the identical twins raised apart. And so these are identical twins that grew up in totally different environments. And, as a result, you then would look to biological factors for what they share in common. Well, the problem is that there were these twins, there was this big study that was done, and there were these twins that shared such minute details in common, things like, their first wife's name was Linda and the second wife's name was Mary, and they both named their child, James Allen, and their dog, something else. And yeah. I mean, the similarities of, were just astounding. And they're up to, I think, like something like 130 cases, of these identical twins raised apart. I mean, it's just astounding. And so I studied, I'm not only a psychiatrist, but I also had studied genetics, and I was actually part of the Human Genome Project in the beginning. And so I know about the genetics. I've followed that. And there was a huge disappointment when the Human Genome Project was completed, and they discovered that we have so few genes. We only have... the amount of genes range depending upon what you read. They range somewhere in the mid to late 20,000s. Or the 30,000 genes. And that's it. And then if you look at using epigenetics, which is what controls, which genes are turned on and genes are turned off. Even if you include that in there, it doesn't explain these kinds of similarities. I mean, how could that be genetic? It doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. It fits much more in with the idea that even though in the physical dimensions that are visible to us, they were separated. There was still a connection at some other level between them. Some of the stuff that they did, it's just interesting. It either means that there's some kind of connection. And when I say connection, I don't mean that it's necessarily telepathic. I'm not talking about it being a telepathic connection. But there's some way in which they're still, I don't see how genetics can explain it. There's some way in which their behavior, the Jim twins, for example. I mean, they both, right before they met each other, they had this impulse to build this white circular structure around a tree in their backyard. I mean, how can there be a genetics to that? And if there is, then how does one inherit that?
Exactly. Well, what your book builds up to, is your description of what you call the Mobius mind. And I imagine you came up with that because you do mention the Mobius strip, showing that our mind is continuous and connected, and there are inner and outer worlds that are not as separate as we think. So our consciousness is, would you describe it as a field or a force that can sometimes access information from the from the past and the future?
Yeah, I would.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And what about all the people that have these precognitive episodes, specifically in dreams? Mm-hmm. Well, that, you know, they'll see a future occurrence, and then that plays out. So that always raises the question of whether or not, if the future is already set because you viewed it, whether or not we can change it. And that's
yeah, which probably. Yeah, and you know, and it's interesting that there's evidence for both. You know, I've heard very very interesting stories of both. It went, you know, a story of you know, a woman who, you know, was able to avert an accident. You know, she had had this, you know, dream over and over again, and was able to avert an accident, and someone else who couldn't. What does that say to us? Does it say to us, is it just random, but then how do it's sort of like, is the universe both deterministic and and
right.
random? And then you start getting into, you know, quantum physics, you know, and people, there's a lot of misunderstanding about quantum physics and what quantum physics says. And there's also a lot of disagreement among physicists. There isn't really a consensus among physicists as to how the universe is constructed. There are various theories that are trying to make sense of it all.
Yeah, I think that one of the quantum physicists made a comment to the effect that if anybody tells you they know what quantum physics is, then, you know, they don't.
Yeah, exactly. And, yeah. You know, I try to, in my book, sort of write it in, legible, or, you know, articulate it in terms which somebody would be able to understand who wouldn't necessarily have, you know, a background, you know, mm. in any physics, you know. So that's what I, you know, wanted to do, is make my book, you know, make that kind of science accessible rather than something that's sort of like, you know, if people go, ooh, I couldn't handle that.
Yeah. You mentioned before that when you're sitting with a patient, you use your own intuition. I mean, and I hear that from a lot of these days, from quite a number of medical practitioners. Is this something you think that has always been going on, or people are starting to trust their intuition more?
I think the best clinicians have always been intuitive. You know, just like I think the most creative scientists have been as well. And I think the best thing is to combine, you know, use both intuition and logic, and really, you know, find the truth that way. And to ignore one at the expense of the other is a mistake. And, you know, I'm fortunate in that my brain actually, it's really very balanced that way. You know, I really, I'm very fluid. I can kind of go back and forth. And inform, you know, each other, and that really, unfortunately, that's a lot of people seem to fall into one camp or the other.
Mm. Well, I think there's something to be said for a balanced psychiatrist. I applaud that.
I certainly would want one.
Right. Well, we have been talking with Dr. Diane Hennessy Powell. The book we've been talking about is The ESP Enigma, The Scientific Case for Psychic Phenomena. If you're interested in this, I would recommend the book. There is a link on our website, an Amazon link to the book. She discusses consciousness and the brain and clairvoyance and mind over matter and a lot of other things that are pretty interesting, and it's not in terribly detailed scientific terms, so you'll be able to understand it. The website is DianeHennesseyPowell.com, and we thank you so much for being with us again.
Yeah, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
All right, thanks. Have a good evening.
Thanks. Bye-bye. You too. Bye-bye.
We now ask our listeners to please join us in our Healing Energy Circle prayer, May the universe create a channel of healing energy for more participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind, as we visualize the healing light upon Francis Mastracco, Tim Donahue, Deb Martin, Tina Jocelyn, Barbara Russell, Vicky Steffi, Wendy Lippo, Mark Varon, Eileen Lafada, Rita Springer, David Hayes, Barbara Patillo, Glenna Irwin, Julie B., Stanley Mullen, Flora Prisco, Tracy Lee Nash, Miriam Pierschka, Tanya Cash, George Daly, Dorothy Mello, Pat Leo Grande, and Bill Amendolari. Now let us, as one consciousness, give our energy of loving thought by praying like this: to love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment. And now it's time for us to say,
our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.